The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. I would say Chag Sameach, except it's not much of a chag, even though it is a public holiday in Israel today. But I think Groundhog Day. Did you ever watch the movie Groundhog Day?
Of course, one of my favorite movies.
Okay, that's exactly what it feels like today.
Yeah, I would imagine. Because the polls have opened. It's the fourth election in 2 years.
Yes, exactly that. In fact, Israel is considered to be now the democracy in the top 20 democratic countries around the world, which has had the most frequent elections since 1996. There's all the reasons to feel very, very despondent about today, with us having to decide for the fourth time in 2 years, and with really no change having been evident at all over that time. During that time, we've had the same prime minister, the same kind of structure of government. Really, nothing has changed. So on the one hand, we feel very despondent. On the other hand, this is our democracy. And we have to be grateful to live in a democratic country as we do, particularly in the part of the world that we live in where democracy is not taken for granted. So we're happy to have a democratic country, but the democracy is very split out. I mean, it might surprise people to learn that there are 37 parties taking part in today's election. Obviously, we only hear much about the main parties, the ones that are most likely to achieve that the minimum number of votes required, the threshold in order to be able to gain participation in the Knesset. That is 3.25% of the votes cast. If you do not achieve 3.25%, then you will not receive any representation in the Knesset. We're expecting that something like only just a few parties will ultimately manage to gain the minimum threshold that's required. And so what happens is today is that 120 Knesset seats are up for grabs. And the method of polling is, of course, the fact that we have a system where you vote for a political party rather than an individual. The party with the most seats will then have the option of potentially forming the government. The president will consult with all of the leaders of the parties who gain representation in the Knesset to decide who he will invite to form a government. It is likely to be the party with the most seats, and in this particular instance, we expect that that will be the Likud party, headed up by Prime Minister Netanyahu. The method of voting is a proportional representation system, which means that all people around the country will vote for the same parties, and that the number of seats will be divided up according to the proportion that each our party manages to gain in the national vote. And of course, only those parties who achieve 3.25% of the vote will get representation. Those parties who receive less than 3.25% will simply have their votes lost. Those votes will then be reallocated across those parties who do manage to achieve the minimum threshold. So that is the technicality of how things work. But of course, there is so much that lies behind technicalities, a few things that might be worth discussing. For example, the fact that the Shas leader, Aryeh Deri, had asserted that Haredi women would be the first to oppose a party that has female ultra-Orthodox politicians. That was a statement that he made in order to try to defend why there are no ladies on his list representing the Shas party. And he feels that it's absolutely justified, and he feels that the electorate that supports him would also support that. I think that he's probably mistaken, even within his own electorate, because I think that what we're seeing is that the ultra-Orthodox female is really coming to the fore much more than was ever the case before, wanting to take her place in society, wanting to go out to work, wanting to lead various things, and potentially wanting to sit in the Knesset. So I'm not quite sure how he would be able to justify that in the fullness of time. It was interesting that on Saturday night there was almost a debate between Yair Lapid and Prime Minister Netanyahu, who appear to be the two main prime ministerial candidates. Lapid invited Prime Minister Netanyahu to a debate. He said that he would be willing to take up on it on Saturday night. At the last moment, apparently the TV studios were made available. All was ready, except that the second party to the debate, the Prime Minister himself, did not agree. So that debate never happened.
There doesn't seem to be much of that, unlike sort of the American elections, where this public debate between some of the main candidates is a common thing. Israel doesn't really engage much in it, does it?
There have been situations before where a public debate has been held on TV. The problem, of course, with these things, and we've seen it in the US as well, is that the rules that have to be laid down are so stringent beforehand. How many questions and how much time you have to hesitate before you're allowed to answer, and whether you're entitled to interrupt, and how long your answer has to take, and who's going to ask which question first, and, you know, or be asked first. So there are so many different rules that it almost becomes contrived in the way that it's set up, where it's supposed to be something which is natural and flows. And we certainly saw in the Trump era that even the rules that were so stringently set down weren't necessarily adhered to. And the kind of backwards and forwards that went on there didn't seem to be particularly helpful at all. And then, of course, you have to declare who won, right? That's the most important thing.
Yeah,
the
no one can ever agree on that.
But then you have to make this declaration afterwards. Who was the winner by so much support? And I mean, I'm not sure whether it really helps the situation very much. My decision is really unclear about whether public debates are really a thing, a good thing, whether they're helpful, whether they really put people on the spot. And the issue with the Likud and the Prime Minister in particular, ironically, is that in the last four elections over the last 2 years, the Likud has not actually presented a formal election platform. These are the things that we believe in. These are the things that we don't believe in. Nothing like that is presented. Not only that, but there hasn't really been a system of primaries to elect candidates to the list, because it's just so soon after the previous system of primaries that let's not bother. We already have our list. We'll tinker a few things here and there. Unfortunately, our elections over the past a couple of years have really all been about one person, Prime Minister Netanyahu. It's really all about him. Whether he will be re-elected or whether he will not be re-elected. And that's really what all of this focuses on. In fact, you know, we see so many people saying, I don't really mind whether it be Yair Lapid or whether it be Bennett or whether it be Mickey Mouse. I mean, let him be prime minister
as long as it isn't Netanyahu.
And it's a little sad when we're voting against somebody rather than voting in favor of something. I would always like to believe that an election is about making a change and voting for something positive. You believe in something, you want something to happen, let's vote for the person who will make that happen for you, rather than voting for anybody who is not the person that you don't want. And I think that that's really where we're at.
Well, I would go
right
so far as to say that's exactly what happened in the United States.
True.
It was.
And we've seen this phenomenon.
I would have been shocked that anybody would have chosen Biden as a leader, but I'm not surprised that people didn't want Donald Trump. That I can understand.
Right.
So it does make sense. I'd love to hear from our listeners, 345-19 or 0618951019. Do you think that these public debates between the candidates is something valuable, or has it become so regulated, and what Anthony was saying earlier, that it almost feels contrived? Yeah, 345-19 or 0618951019. I'd love your thoughts and your input on that. All right,
I mean, I'll add something more. There's so much preparation and rehearsal that goes on before these debates to get the main sound bites out. You know, as you can hear, I'm somewhat cynical about them, even though I do agree that there is a point to hearing what the candidates have to say. But, you know, the whole soundbite thing becomes a little too much, and you don't feel that you're getting the true person. You're getting whoever's been coaching them.
Right.
That's really getting out.
That is true. Although that said, Antonis, I find them useful, not because of the words of the answers, but in terms of their reaction, how they present themselves on stage, how they react when challenged. These are the things, because very often, and I did feel that about Biden, I've said it quite publicly, is I think that often beneath the veneer of this calm, gentle guy is somebody who's quite insecure and somebody who's quite angry. And I saw that happening during the debate. I saw that slipping, and it gave me that insight into him. So I do think it's got value in that regard. But you have to be very attuned to it in order to follow that, because as you say, so much of it is choreographed and staged that it really does become quite dull. All right, let's just move on. The Technion yesterday launched 3 satellites into space. This is incredible, but what are these satellites designed to do?
So yesterday, apparently, there were actually 37 satellites launched all in all on this Soyuz rocket that was launched yesterday from Kazakhstan. And the 3 Technion satellites were part of a whole group of these satellites. They all are what they call CubeSats. These CubeSats weigh about 8 kilograms, and they come equipped with sensors and control systems and navigation tools and all kinds of impressive things on board. These satellites that were launched by the Technion are part of the Technion's Adela Samson project, and they will be used, we are told, to calculate the location of planes, ships, and people. Now, I don't exactly know what that means, and whether we really want these satellites to be locating planes, ships, and people, because obviously a lot of these are already being located in one way or another. But I think what's more impressive than the use of these satellites, because obviously I don't know that we all really understand what that little soundbite sentence really means, and I would be interested to learn a little bit more about it. But I'm really more interested and more impressed by some of the technology that goes into launching these satellites, creating these satellites. They will have solar panels that will gather energy that will allow the satellites to continue to be equipped. They will have control over their flight without any fuel, using what's called air drag in the atmosphere. Nice. They will have computers on board that will apparently be able to operate for something like 30 years without any additional power sources being provided, because obviously once they're up in space, there isn't an additional power source. So they already come equipped on board with very, very, very low energy computers. And the satellites travel apparently 550 kilometers above the ground, transmitting signals constantly to the Technion's Space Research Mission Control Center. It's not the first time that the Technion has launched satellites. In 1998, they launched the so-called Gerwin TechSat, and now, 11 years later, that satellite is still in orbit. So a little bit of interesting cooperation between the Technion and some Israeli companies that have designed some of the technology and the electronics that have gone on board these satellites. And let's hope that something useful will come out of this tracking, because I'm really not sure why we all need to be tracked and why planes and people and vehicles need to be tracked. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see what transpires. And of course, it's really great for Israeli space technology.
Absolutely amazing. Another great story that we have, but let's keep that for tomorrow. It really is another good news story. Do you think we'll have more or any indication tomorrow in terms of where the election has gone?
We will have the exit poll tomorrow to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure how much we can really rely upon the exit poll, but we will have that at least. And of course, we will have some of the shenanigans that will go on today. Various people will make comments which will all be newsworthy, I'm sure, which we'll discuss tomorrow. But other than the exit poll, I don't think that we'll have any clearer indication. And to be fair, I don't really think that we will know too much about what the final result will look like until probably next week sometime. But I'm hoping that by the time we get to Thursday and we have our chat on Thursday, we will at least have some indication of what the vote count is looking like. So tomorrow we'll talk about the exit polls and some of the things that went on today. And hopefully there'll be some other good news stories that we'll have to talk about as well.
Absolutely right. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Rock, thank you as always. You can catch Anthony tomorrow morning, same time, same place, 7:45.